The Weekly Connect on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to The Weekly Connect. I'm Stephen Scott, and over the course of the next hour, we are going to be talking about the issues that matter to you if you're blind or partially sighted. And have we got a show for you this week? Now, you might remember a couple of weeks back, we talked to Sally Harvey. She is the acting chief exec of RNIB. And she told us about some of the plans for the future of the UK's leading sight loss charity. Well, we hear your view on this week. We hear from Maxine and Carol, who join us to tell us what they think about the upcoming changes. Also, Hussein and Amanda popped into the studio to tell us all about their thoughts on passenger assistance. And Amanda's reluctance to use passenger assistance changed recently. Hussein talks to her about that. Plus, we get your Society of the Week. And this week, it's the Beacon Centre for the Blind in the Black Country. That's all coming up.
The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
Plus, this week, we're going to be taking a look at a new device that has been launched by RNIB. It's called RNIB In Your Pocket. And the purpose of it is to help you get access to newspapers and magazines really simply. We'll find out what it is and what it means to blind and partially sighted people who are using it already. That is coming up. But first, changes at RNIB. Big changes announced by Sally Harvey, the acting chief exec. And we heard about them on the most recent Weekly Connect. Well, this week we join Maxine and Carol, who are both here to tell us their thoughts on what they heard. Maxine and Carol, good to have you here.
Pleasure.
The future of RNIB is in question at the moment, I guess. A lot of changes going on at the organisation. Some of them are being made public, and people are being involved in those discussions to bring the voice of blind and partially sighted people out more, which, you know, many of us think is a good thing. But I just want to sort of bring you both on because I know you both have various views on the RNIB and the charity and what it does. And I just wanted to start maybe with you, Carol, and find out what your thoughts were on what Sally Harvey said last week.
Well, I didn't know about, but I have listened to the interview. I have met Sally Harvey. I know she's acting chief exec, but she was part of the exec team, so she has a lot of background with the RNIB. My take on it is, I was actually on the RNIB, well, it was the exec council, and then it became the assembly, and it became apparent in those days that a lot of people use the services of the RNIB, but if they wanted to contact people, they couldn't. Do you know what I mean? That they had no record. So the membership came. The membership came about, and the member forums. And that was the first time that I actually saw people coming together under the RNIB umbrella. Now, unfortunately, it got that it was always the same people. And I've always said, it's very hard. I mean, I live in Blackpool, and you know, I'm very involved with sight loss issues, but there wasn't a lot of people involved with the RNIB in Blackpool, unless it was the Talking Books, which was, you know, absolutely tremendous. And I believe, since it's become a free service, I mean, the numbers have just, I don't know. I'm going to say, off the top of my head, say 25,000. I don't know, but it's tremendous. It's tremendous. But having listened to the interview and the changes going on with Sally and the questions, well, sorry, with the RNIB, and the questions that were being asked about taking action for blind, you know, and including Action for Blind, and it all being all under the same umbrella, RNIB. And of course, there's going to be changes. But I'm sure she gave a figure that at the moment, I think they can reach something like the number of 100,000 people. But I mean, there's 2 billion out there. I don't know. I presume that's England, Scotland, Wales, and Ireland. I didn't really kind of catch on to that. And it is a shame because the services that the RNIB give are wonderful, absolutely wonderful. The talk and support is unbelievable, and it's all free. And I mix with lots and lots of people, basically in the Northwest now. I don't travel too far, but you know, when I mention them and I say, no, it's absolutely free. And you mean we can be rung once a week and speak to five people on the telephone for an hour? I said, yeah, yeah. And it's almost like it's all hovering above us, but somehow with the RIB are missing the contact. And how can they make the contact when they don't have any details of people with a sight loss? I don't know how you get around that. So I think the bigger picture is brilliant, absolutely brilliant, because I know living where I live, there will be people four or five avenues away who will have a sight problem, but because of the sight problem, they're not getting out the same. They're very isolated. And it's not till maybe a member of their family says, comes to me and says, Carol, how do we go on about this and this? And I'll say, well, you know, and there is a local society and the RNIB and it's a free phone number. And they're flabbergasted. It opens up. So I don't know. I did suggest maybe a little, I don't know if it's feasible, but maybe, you know, some kind of information on the local radio stations. Because there are a lot of very lonely people out there these days. It's the way of life, unfortunately. Neighbours don't neighbour.
Okay, so,
anyway,
so
I think I've chatted on enough now. Sorry, Maxine, but it was just...
No, that's all right. No, I'm usually the one who talks too much.
Well, nobody talks too much.
You're making sense.
Nobody talks too much on our programme, not at all. What I will say to you, though, Carol, is just as a pick-up on one of your points. So Action for Blind People and RNIB, as you say, would become one, and it would all become under the name RNIB, which is a bit of a structural change, and I guess a lot of people might think, well, what does that really mean? And, you know, will that really have any impact? But what you're picking up on, Carol, is that it's the services themselves that people just don't know about, and RNIB need to do better.
Yeah.
At connecting with those people who are not currently receiving any services. Maxine, what's your view on this?
Well, I feel very strongly about the fact that Cambridge, which has an enormous number of people, they have Campsite, the local one, which is extremely successful. They have wonderful volunteers. I mean, it does a good job. But it's not RNIB. It's a much smaller, personalised charity. But there's a need, and I keep trying to get people. Now, I don't have time to set up a group in there, and the new woman whose name escapes me at this moment, I think she's trying to. We're trying to get together. I said I'm willing to give advice, but I'm involved in so many things. I work with a local council and a whole lot of stuff, and I like time to myself, that I cannot afford the time or the effort, or I can't travel around because obviously I can't drive and live on my own. I want a really good, competent people, because as I explain, and Campsite knows this, we're not in competition with Campsite. We take over where they leave off. They're not big enough to have all the services and things that RNIB provides. And, you know, that when they have the maybe twice a year, they have the what do you call them here, the functions, whatever they use, the Masonic Lodge here. You do get some RNIB members there, but a lot of the people are actually Campsite people who are interested in knowing what's doing. There's nothing that goes out in Cambridge, no communication that encourages people to join. I try to do it, but to be honest with you, I don't have any friends who are visually impaired. So I don't know many people who are visually impaired. So I can't. I try to put out the message. I work with Campsite. I mean, they're really friendly and they think it's a wonderful idea that we provide all those services.
Can I ask you, you know, you mentioned about the service Campsite and, you know, the work that they do. It's really interesting because this is one aspect and one area that RNIB is very keen to change its image on, and that is, instead of being seen as an organisation that sort of trumps its way through a country and sort of takes over local charities and, you know, swallows them whole and then spits them back out with the RNIB badge on it. Actually, it's quite the opposite. RNIB now wants to work with local organisations and actually empower those organisations.
Exactly.
Is that the right move?
And Yes, that's what I keep telling everybody. That's, and they're willing to do that. To some extent, they do that now when the time, you know, when it's something that involves both charities, but they're not offered the chance to do it more often. Now, they have a new chief, and Strether has resigned due to family things. She's been there for years, and she's a bit lovely lady, a bit wishy-washy. She's very negative, but I've always got along with her well, and I've even put together a charity thing, a fundraiser with them. But RNIB did nothing on that one because the person in charge of fundraising was on holiday in Hawaii at the time, so they didn't sell any tickets, and so naturally they wouldn't do another one. So, but they have to work together. There's tremendous number of, I mean, the number of people who live in or near Cambridge, because they can't afford to live in Cambridge, but they come in from all the villages, and there are loads of old people. I belong to the University of the Third Age, and so you have to be over, is it 50? I can't remember, because I'm well over the age anyway, and I've been a member for years. But there are quite a few people there who could use RNIB if they knew about them.
So there's two things.
And I've brought this up time after time.
Yeah, there's two things that seem to be coming up from both of you, and that is awareness of services and availability of local services. These two things seem to be marrying up here.
Absolutely.
And what's interesting is, to me, I guess, the question of why is it that these services, and you've both said it, the RNIB provide great services, but people are just not getting access to them.
Because they don't know they exist. That's right. We're absolutely in tune here. That's absolutely right. And I think the other thing, you know, which is part of that, I think RNIB wastes an awful lot of money. For instance, we're having a telephone conference. I had one yesterday, and there were several people on that one, about six of us, and which makes sense to me because they go, well, people respect the other people and give them a chance to have their say. But, you know, they have all these things in Birmingham, whatever, and I've been to a few of them. But quite honestly, I haven't gained an awful lot from them. And because we can't see each other, we can't recognize people from other times. And you sit at a table with people you don't know. And my suggestion is that because you do come into contact with people from other places, that you request that you sit at a table with this one or that one, so you get a chance to catch up, rather than with people, you know, you've never spoken to before, or if you did, you can't recognize them, as I can't. So there's a lot of money wasted.
Using technology, actually, using even a standard phone, you know, can obviously cut down costs tremendously of travel, and as you say, you can often achieve more. So that's an interesting side to it. Carol, any more thoughts from you on what RNIB can do to get itself out there and make blind and partially sighted people who are not currently receiving any services aware of those services and benefit from them?
Well, yes, I have thought of that at great length because I have actually been trustee and chairman of a local blind society and fought the corner that it was very narrow-minded to think that because, you know, you mentioned this word, this is going back a few years. Well, how many years was this? Where are we up to? 2000. Yeah, about 6 years ago. And I was involved with the RNIB, as I say, and I thought the services were wonderful. And they didn't clash with any services that the local society provided at all. But I suspect, and I still suspect, that the kind of suspicion that the local societies have of the RNIB and what they're frightened of is the old legacy thing. Do you know what I mean? That people will leave their legacies to RNIB and not the local society. There definitely must be something there because, to me, they provide wonderful services. You've just said about campsite. All the local societies, without a doubt, provide very good services, but they don't provide all the services.
No,
and they don't,
not
particularly,
like legal help, tax help, things like that.
They don't particularly publicise the additional national services and local services that the RNIB provide.
You're
and
right.
It frustrates me.
It frustrates me too, yes. Well, it doesn't frustrate me. They don't supply it because they're not big. But it frustrates me that they... Well, they're not going to advertise RNIB for us. That's up to RNIB. RNIB should take that and make it known and work with them.
I think I think they do try, in my experience in the Northwest. But I don't know what the answer is. But I do think somewhere along the line there must be another media, which I can only think is local radio stations.
Maybe the railway as well, you never know.
Yeah.
Railway as well. and that's the only thing I can think. I mean, you know, you don't have a register of everybody that's partially sighted or blind or... And so how do you reach them other than word of mouth? It's not easy, is it?
Well, I think we should try to cooperate more with the local ones because they all have, you know, I get CDs all the time from Macular Society. I'm a member, but I don't attend meeting. You know, I've got enough going on. But I do pay my dues, which is my way of contributing. And it's all about research. They're very interesting, the CDs. But I get the CDs and I play them on my Daisy player. But if they, and there is a talking newspaper for visually impaired people. So those are good means of advertising it. And we have, I think, two local stations that would probably be willing. So, no, that's a good way to go because that would be at no charge. Also, you know, there are a lot of charities, and I know they probably have more money than we do, that sort of advertise on television. And also,
that's very expensive, Maxine.
I know it is. But if we were to try to get, you know, some contributions specifically for that, I mean, we probably have a few very wealthy members. I don't know whether they'd be willing to do that. I know it's expensive to advertise.
Okay. Maxine Carroll, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye, folks. Bye.
And if you want to share your views on what you've heard from Maxine and Carol, please do get in touch. theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk is our email address. We do check our postbox every single week, so do make sure you get in touch. Share your views and thoughts. More of those coming up, because we did quite a number of emails over the past couple of weeks. We'll get to those. But one of the things that Maxine and Carol both mentioned was that RNIB really should work more closely with local societies. Well, that is something RNIB is trying to do. And indeed, we here at the Weekly Connect do it every single week in a feature we call Society of the Week.
My name's Helen Brown. I'm the Communications Development Manager at the Beacon Centre. We work with people with sight loss across the Black Country. I've worked here for about a year and a half.
My name's Yvonne Walker and I'm a service user at the Beacon Centre in Wolverhampton. I had a brain tumour called a meningioma and it was sitting above the optic nerves because I had to have a craniotomy, so it actually destroyed the optic nerves. Got my sight back for 4 days and then lost it again because the optic nerves had a stroke. Lost the sight overnight. You just got to get on with it, and I'd got two young daughters, so you just got to get on with life, and the Beacon Centre have helped me do that.
We offer a huge variety of services. We've got lots of day activities, things like cooking classes, social activities, pottery sessions. We do tailored health, so gym sessions based around things like fall prevention, painting, knitting. We have a low vision advice service. We have the UK's first accredited social enterprise opticians, which helps fund some of the work that we do. We have a second centre in Stourbridge where they also run an array of day activities. We have a hugely successful employment programme. We also have a very active activity group called Active Eyes who go out and do all sorts of things like climbing, rowing, walking, running. And we have a youth club as well.
Social services were in touch with me and trying to do rehab, learning with the white long cane and some cookery skills again, and they brought me on a visit to the Beacon Centre
and asked me if I would like to, you know, would it be something I would be wanting to do. So I came on a visit, and it was good because we got the carpentry, we got cooking classes, we got the craft classes, computers. So everything has altered over the years, obviously. But I thought, well, yeah, I'll come and have a go. So I started off doing crafts and some computer lessons, and that's how I've gone on over the years, still doing crafts, cookery. I've also done with the Active Eyes as well. So I've learnt different things. I've done water skiing, I've climbed the gladiator wall, I've done loads of different things. You've got to push yourself and keep proving that blind people can do. I really enjoy seeing the pottery that people do because it's absolutely fantastic. Some of it's often sold to raise funds for the work we do at the centre. I have a beautiful shell in my bathroom that everybody comments on when they come in, and it's just stunning to see what can be achieved. We very much want to be needed, not needy. So one of the things we have is our social enterprise opticians, which we hope that, as well as raising funds, helps raise awareness about the importance of eyesight. And, you know, we're always looking to do new and innovative fundraising things like that wherever we can. We've got around just under 200 volunteers and just under 100 members of staff. And we could help kind of anywhere up to 3,000 people a year. So one of our particular specialisms is technology, and we are constantly looking to see where we can use technology to help improve the lives of people with sight loss.
Since I came here, I didn't realise I'd got a creative bone in my body, but with craft work, I've pushed myself. I do sewing and knitting, and over the years, I've made some very weird and wonderful stuff. I've made a scarecrow, which won an award at a craft fair, so I'm quite chuffed myself. Sally and Ellie, who run the classes, they cut them out for us and they pin them, and we follow the pins with our needles, and we've got what we call a self-threading needle, so we can actually thread our needles ourselves. It's got a very little slight slit in the eye of the needle, and we can thread the cotton through, and we can sew away to our heart's content. We don't need to ask anybody to thread a needle for us. And then when you run out of pins, they'll pin the next lot for you, and then we put it all together, or whatever you've got to do with it. I've also started in the life skills kitchen, so I'm relearning stuff, and I'm actually learning how to do other stuff I've wanted to have a go at. And today we've just been making fish pie. The other week we did samosas. We've done the Christmas cake. You know, it's just relearning and giving you the confidence to have a go at different things. And I have made some of the things that we've made in the Life Skills Kitchen. I've done it at home on my own, and it's given me the confidence to do it. I mean, I also do computers, so I'm actually learning on an iPad at the moment. So everything nowadays is going to iPads and Androids and everything. So it gives us the chance to learn all the gestures. Then I can actually talk to my children now, and they know what I'm on about, and I know what they're on about. So it's actually given me a bridge so I can understand what they're on about now.
You got another Society of the Week on the wall, and great to hear from the guys at the Beacon Centre for the Blind. Yes, every week we feature a Society of the Week, that's what we call it, and if you think you should be nominating someone, maybe an organisation that you've been involved in that's maybe helped you in some way when perhaps you've been losing your sight, or as a result of sight loss or having vision issues over the years, you've maybe thought to yourself, this local society really did something for me, then you might want to nominate them. And if you do, then all you have to do is send us an email to theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. Now, we do love to talk about the issues that matter to you. It is your programme. That's why we call it The Weekly Connect, connecting with you. If you're blind or partially sighted, this is the programme that gives you the opportunity to really talk about those issues that no one else will really touch. If, let's be honest about it. You know, mainstream media will go so far with some of this, but you know, only we as blind and partially sighted people really understand the issues. So this is the place we can talk about them, which is great. And that's exactly why Amanda Burt and Hussein Patwa have joined us this week. They've come down all the way from Aberdeen to tell us their story about passenger assistance. Guys, over to you.
Hi, Amanda. It's really good to see you. How was your holiday?
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. Apart from the fact that when I come back from Gatwick, the man checked that boarding passes five times and we just about delayed the flight.
Wow, you flew back from Gatwick. I thought you didn't like flying.
I don't really, but I thought, I think it might be convenient and it's going to be a bit cheaper. So I'm, and the assistance does work. There are things I don't like. I mean, as I say, I do realise that we have to be there pretty early, but you know, sometimes if you're there 2 hours before, you're sort of, there is a lot of hanging around that I don't like, but I'll accept that. Security.
Yeah, I mean, I fly myself, so I know exactly what you mean, and who likes hanging around at an airport 2 hours in advance? But you know, like you say, people really are great, and if you plan ahead, it tends to work quite well. I've also flown abroad as well, and I find that the service is quite good, mm-hmm. As long as you're just organised. Did you find any problems on your way back?
Not really problems. I mean, obviously, you're never quite sure exactly what's going to happen, you know, when you go through security, because, you know, you don't know what's, you know, if the thing's going to go off, what's, you know, if it does go off, what triggers it, and you sort of think, well, and I think I've been searched a few times because either something metal's gone off, and I think, this is a wee bit scary.
Oh, but tell me about it. It's an absolute nuisance knowing what to pack. But the first time I went through the thing, I walked into the detector and I thought I broke the thing. I was terrified. But the people were really good and helped me out. And like you say, I've been searched a couple of times, but generally it goes without a problem. And, you know, it's something that everybody has to go through. So I suppose we just have to live with it.
We do. I haven't quite got used to it yet. I'm still always a bit, you know, when I go through security, I think, oh, I'm a bit sort of stressed out. And then once you're sort of there, you think, okay, that was okay. I mean, it's fine when the assistance person sort of reassures you and says, oh, you know, it's okay. It's just, you know, you're not going to be arrested or anything like that. Because one time I came back from Gatwick, or got back to Gatwick, actually, when I was going to see somebody. And then everything was going fine. I thought, oh, yeah, this is good. This is easy. Then some very officious person came up and said, what's your date of birth? Like that. And I thought, oh, dear.
Jesus, that's terrible. What did he want?
I don't know what. I said, why do you want it? We just need it. So I gave it. I thought, I hope that's going to be the end of it. But luckily, it was. And wow, I was able to just go back on my way.
I suppose there's always going to be somebody that's a bit like that. But from what you're saying, generally, it sounds like you've had a good experience now. And you certainly sound a lot more confident.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm a lot better. As I say, I mean, I think, you know, these things, you know, are just slightly problematic. But I think, you know, the more I do it, the more used to it I'll get.
I think you're right. I'm going to visit my grandparents in Tanzania with my mum in about 3 weeks' time. And I've booked assistance, but it wasn't the easiest process booking assistance in the first place. Because I booked with a travel agent and there was absolutely nothing said about it at all. And I thought that I'd try and call the airline, but see, trying to find the number of an airline was trying to find a needle in a haystack. And I'm still waiting for them to get back to me. But from what I've known in the past, eventually the whole thing clicks together. But I really wish it was easier to do that. It would be nice if you book the thing and you could just tick a box or something to say, I'm visually impaired, I need assistance. And then that was just passed through rather than having to go from pillar to post.
Yeah, that would be an awful lot easier, because if you're having to deal with two companies, you're just never quite sure if all the information's down right. That would stress me out, because you sort of do need things to be, well, as simple as possible, just to save on the stress.
How do you get to Gatwick?
Well, obviously, fly from Dicey Airport, which is...
No, I mean, how do you get to the airport at the other end when you're coming back?
Sorry.
Do you take the train?
No, I just take a taxi. It's quite near, so I just do that.
But isn't that difficult, trying to, you know, how do you get from the taxi to the assistance people? Because there's all this kerfangle about parking nowadays, and you can't park close to the airports. How do you manage that?
Well, it's funny, actually, because the times I've actually been, the taxi driver has just taken me in. So I don't know whether they are sort of doing, whether they're sort of just parking and not getting into trouble about it. Because they've taken me into the assistance point and just said, look, you know, this is the blind person. Can you just deal with it? And then they've just gone and left me.
I wish it was the same up in Aberdeen, because often when I go, especially over the winter, it's dark in the morning and there's a phone point out in the car park, but I'm never really sure how to describe it. And okay, you pick up the phone and somebody answers at the other end and you give your name and they say that they'll be out, but it's really not the best waiting out there, especially in the winter and the cold and rain. You're never sure who's coming, and sometimes people are offering to help you, but you're scared to leave in case then the assistant person can't find you. And it would just be nice if everything was a lot more connected. And, you know, other of my friends go to the airport and they get to the airport, they park, they walk through, and there's no problem. Everything just runs like clockwork. But it just seems to be this maze that you need to navigate. Mm. And don't even get me started about buying things at the airport. I mean, come on, I'm visually impaired, but I've got every right to buy a cola or have a coffee as anyone else.
Mm.
But the first time I flew, I remember I didn't want to ask. I thought I'd be holding them all up.
Mm.
But eventually one of them was kind enough to tell me, and, you know, they said, "You've got every right to do whatever anyone else wants to do. And if you want a coffee, just tell us." And now I go a little bit early because I get the assistants and I just ask them if they wouldn't mind running me by the cafe and get a little Red Bull. I know I shouldn't have it. It's terrible for terrible for my health, but they're good enough to do that. And it just makes me feel, I suppose, more normal, if that makes any sense. Mm. It makes me feel like, you know, someone that wasn't visually impaired would feel, and it just makes me feel more like a regular member of society.
Mm. Yeah, well, this is, it's one thing I've not done yet. I've not had the nerve to ask them.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe I should, sort of, you know, if ever I sort of fancy a coffee or a cola or something, just say, can you sort of take me to the into the shop? Obviously, you've got to do it after you get through security because you can't take that through.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, maybe I should do, but I've...
Well, absolutely. Why shouldn't you? I mean, anyone else would. And to be honest, some of those muffins in some of the coffee shops are to die for.
Oh, are they? Oh, well, in that case, I've really got to go and do it then.
I really recommend the triple chocolate one, but don't tell the dentist.
Oh, that sounds lovely. Yes, I like the sound of that. Yeah, I think I'll have to do that, because you want to try and make your experience as relaxed as possible, don't you?
Well, this is it. And I used to travel a lot by train before I started flying, and the train was good, but you had all these problems with delays. And to be honest, you know, even though I love traveling by train, it's now just starting to cost an absolute fortune. And, you know, flying down to London or within the UK or even flying abroad has become so cheap now that you just want to be able to do it and head off on holiday as and when you want.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
I just hope that, you know, someday someone will come up with a way to make everything more interconnected.
Mm.
And, flying will become even more enjoyable than it already is. If you can do it, then surely anyone can.
Well, you would hope so, because I mean, I still don't find it as relaxing as I do the train, I've got to say. But I think it will get there.
What do you mean? How would you think that you would feel more comfortable?
Well, I think it might be just the structure of it, because you know you've got to, you know, with the train you just sort of go into the place you sort of get, you know, that's the ticket office, you say, oh, I'm going to such and such. Oh, okay, fine, just sit down and I'll get the assistance person, get on the train, end of. And that just seems to be me. I sit with a book, sort of with the plane, you sort of do that. But then there's the security that I'm still not quite over yet. And then there's all this hanging around and, oh, you've ready to go to the plane now, but then you're sort of waiting, sort of, and you think, what's going on? Why am I sitting here and waiting?
You know what I mean?
And you think,
you sometimes wonder. I remember one time I was in Bergen and I was waiting to get my connection onwards to Copenhagen, and I was sitting in the gate, you know, wondering if I was in the wrong place or, you know, had I missed a flight. You know, these time differences, sometimes you never remember when to set things. And you're quite, I was sitting there in this empty airport and it was eerie. I mean, who sits around an empty airport at 6 o'clock in the morning, you know, for a flight that's fully booked?
Mm.
And eventually someone did turn up, but I know exactly what you mean. It was a bit nerve-wracking at the time.
It was a bit, because you think, oh, maybe somebody's taking me to the wrong bit, mm. or, you know, where am I going? But as I say, I suppose these things will iron themselves out, but it is, you know, once I've, now that I've started flying, I think, well, it is pretty convenient.
Well, that's fantastic to hear. And, you know, I've always said that, you know, people can be as independent as they want, and it's great to see that, you know, if you can do it, anyone can. I suppose for me, the best piece of advice that someone gave me was to be organised and have all my paperwork in advance. And nowadays, I've just got the apps on my phone, so I'm not having to faff around with all these bits of paper. Most companies just go in the shredder anyway. But, you know, being organised, plan ahead and knowing where I'm going, and the rest just falls into place.
Excellent. Well, I'll certainly take that advice. Yeah, definitely.
Well, let me know if you've got any room for your next trip. I'd love to come along. It's been a while since I've been away.
Certainly will. Absolutely. Yep, definitely.
Shall we order those teas now?
Yeah, what's a good idea?
Excuse me, you two, before you go, and before you get those teas, I just want to bring up one thing that you said, Hussein, that I think a lot of people will be interested in talking about, and that is the comment you made about getting a coffee or getting a donut or a triple chocolate muffin at the...
Oh, they're to die for, Stephen. Haven't tried them, you really should. You're missing something.
I have tried them, trust me. But here's the thing. It's not only that, is it? It's shopping as well.
Well, this is it. I mean, I see all the duty-free offers, but unless I've got someone to help me, there's no way of me getting them. And, you know, yeah, I'm used to shopping online, but it's not the same, is it? You go to the airport, you get a shop, and you've got something in your hand and something to take away. And as I say, you know, most assistant staff are happy to help, but you've always got on your mind that there's other passengers there, and it's just this shyness, I suppose, to feel that you're imposing on somebody. I mean, you know, like I say, they're happy to help, but it's that whole feeling about, you know, always having to ask for something. And, you know, it would be nice if someone just said, and a couple of them have gone, you know, is there anything that you need? And that would just reassure you an awful lot more.
But if you said to them, I want to walk around the electrical store, as I often do, because I love a nosy around the gadgets, you know, I wouldn't necessarily ask. In fact, I haven't ever asked that question because I think I would be holding them back.
And you'd feel as if you're taking up time for somebody else. Yeah. But it shouldn't be like that. I don't know. Maybe in the future, the way the system works will improve a little bit so that, I don't know, maybe it integrates with the stores more so that there's a handover process. So, you know, it would be nice if I could say, oh, take me to the electronic store and maybe come back for me in half an hour and then the store folk can take over, just as you work on a high street.
But of course, Amanda, the fear is, as you've felt this as well, that they don't come back for you. That's a big fear.
Well, that is a big fear. Yeah, because, I mean, airports are big places, and there just seems to be lots of different bits in them that you sort of go, and that would definitely be a fear of mine. But if they did that, sort of say, you know, is there anything you need, that would sort of help, because I must admit, I don't like asking. If they don't sort of say and they just sit you down, I probably wouldn't ask.
I like what you said about the airport being a big place, because knowing my luck, I end up exactly where you're not supposed to go.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Okay, guys, go and enjoy your tea. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Stephen.
Thank you.
Great to hear from you both. And if you have a view on passenger assistance, perhaps a good experience, a negative experience that you want to share, or perhaps more of what you've just heard that you want to agree with, then that is absolutely what the Weekly Connect is here for. Do get in touch with us. Share your thoughts. theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. Now, if you enjoy reading the newspaper and you enjoy reading the odd magazine, well, that's great if you can see them. But if you can't, well, how might you do such a thing? Well, RNIB have launched a new product that could help you do exactly that. Yeah, check out the morning papers, get up to date with your latest magazines. It's called RNIB in Your Pocket.
Hi there, I am RNIB in Your Pocket, powered by Real Sam, your accessible media device from RNIB and Real Thing. My friends call me Sam, and I can read you a large number of newspapers. I can also tell you the weather and the time anywhere in the world, as well as the street address and nearest cross street to where we are located. You can also ask me for radio program podcasts on demand, at the time you want to listen.
Yes, the future is here. RNIB in Your Pocket is the latest product to be launched by the UK Sight Loss Charity. But what is it?
It's a Samsung media player, has O2 connectivity, and interactive speech software from Real Sam, all packaged together with a subscription to RNIB Library and RNIB News Agents.
That's Anna Dearden from RNIB there. So how did all this come about, Anna?
So RNIB in Your Pocket became a reality from a partnership that we've been working on with Real Thing, who have developed the Real Sam speech software, and a relationship with O2, who will be providing the connectivity, and the ability for the Samsung Media Player to carry all this off and actually offer people easier access to RNIB's library and newsagent content.
Okay, so you get access to RNIB talking books. What does that mean? Well, in reality, you have access to around 25,000 books. Plus, the price includes a subscription to RNIB Newsagent, which gives you easy access to the daily papers and also a wide range of magazine titles. In addition to that, you can find Project Gutenberg on there, which gives you access to around 53,000 more books, read to you in a synthetic voice rather than in a real voice. And if that's not enough, you can listen to podcasts as well, like ours at RNIB, plus favourites from the BBC and others. But who's going to buy it?
The product is aimed at people who want access to that content immediately. So anybody who perhaps at the moment doesn't have access to a smartphone or tablet to be able to download or stream that content themselves immediately, this device gives easy access at the touch of a button and is voice controlled to give people access to the library book or the magazine or the newspaper that they want immediately and not having to wait for either that to be delivered or to be made accessible in a format for them.
Sounds good. And yes, you heard right, it's voice controlled, which means no fiddling with small screens or having to master a touchscreen device. To make it work, all you do is push a button at the bottom of the device and talk to it, like this.
Read me the business section of The Guardian.
This is The Guardian from today. There are 6 unread articles in the business section. Headlines 1. Bailey bows to...
Find articles about Theresa May.
Okay, searching for articles about Theresa May. The first page of 13 unread headlines from the search results section 1. Warning on climate.
Number 1.
Warning on climate. UK not ready for heat, floods and disease. The UK is poorly prepared for the inevitable impact.
Speak faster.
No problem, Michael. I'll talk like this now. Say continue to...
It's really that simple. Nick Howden is the CEO of the company Real Thing, who invented the system that makes RNIB in your pocket work.
We started Real Thing about 7 or 8 years ago to tackle the difficult problem of creating natural and engaging interactions between humans and computers. So we've tackled a lot of difficult problems around artificial intelligence, around speech interaction and human emotion modelling. And that's the background of all the people that that came together to create Real Thing. We started off in a toy area. So we started off with interactive toys for kids that you could play games and tell stories and kids could talk to and build a relationship with. And we branched out from there into other areas and quickly realised that people who are blind or low vision use interactive speech quite extensively. And so this was an area that we could apply our technology. And about 18 months ago, we got in touch with RNIB and discovered that they had created the concept of RNIB in your pocket, which the idea was it was a small device that you could carry around and it would provide access to all of RNIB's content in the one device. And that married perfectly with what we'd created from a technology perspective. And so we married the two and created RNIB in your pocket.
But does it work? That's the question. Does it understand your voice and how helpful can it be? Claire Maxwell is blind and has tried it out for RNIB as part of the user testing before it launched.
RNIB in the pocket, I think, is great to have as a different device, not just, you know, having a smartphone that does everything. It sort of feels a bit like when people walk around and they've got a newspaper, you know, when you sit on the train and everyone's got their metro in front of them, and it sort of feels a little bit like that. Yes, you've got a small portable device, but you've got something that's separate, so you're able to access that magazine or newspaper or book or whatever it is and relax in the same kind of environment, you know, whether that's when you're sitting drinking coffee or sitting out in the garden when it's warm enough. Getting hold of this small device, I was a little bit sort of skeptical. I thought, oh, I don't know how this is going to work for me. But when I got to grips with it. It feels a bit like you're having a conversation with someone, because it was very easy. All the commands are very intuitive, because I thought, oh, I'm going to have to learn lots of things, the proper way to say things or the right way to ask for things. But it really kind of feels like you're having a conversation, so you can actually interact. You can say, tell it your name as well, so it can call you by name. You can say, Sam, bring up, the Guardian. I want to read newspaper, this article or something about Theresa May. Or if I wanted to read something about, I don't know, what's happening on that particular date, I can just read through the Guardian or the Daily Mail and what takes my fancy, really. And all I have to do is just ask Sam to do that for me. So it feels really intuitive.
It's not the first device to enable you to just speak to it. Most of us now interact with some kind of personal assistant device. Maybe it's Amazon's Echo or Siri, with Google Home, of course, coming soon as well. However, Nick Howden says R&IB in your pocket offers a much more real interaction.
I think the market is absolutely exploding, and things like the Amazon Echo are great examples of that. My assessment of the Echo is that it's a fantastic piece of hardware. And it does a great job of hearing you across the room and playing music and doing all of that sort of stuff. The dialogue interaction is very limited, and that's, I guess, where our real strength is. It's in having a natural flowing dialogue and really understanding what the user's doing and tracking that through a long-term interaction. Whereas the Echo is great for sort of single transactions. What's the time? Play me a song, those sorts of things, if you want to have a long-term interaction. And that's really what reading a newspaper is. You need a more complex interactive dialogue, and that's what R&IB in your pocket provides.
It certainly can be much more personal to you than other devices, that's for sure. For example, you can ask R&IB in your pocket to call you by name.
Please call me Michael.
Sure, I will call you Michael from now on.
And if you don't like the voice that's speaking to you, you can change it.
Change your voice.
You can use one of the following voices. Hello, I am voice number one.
Hello, I am voice
number two.
Sure, Michael, I will use this voice now.
And as well as listening to books, podcasts and magazines, you can ask it for other things as well.
What is your battery level?
Current battery level is 74%.
What's the weather in Cambridge?
Please wait while I determine the location. The weather as of 31 minutes ago in Cambridge, England, United Kingdom, is 12, clouds. Today's minimum was 12 and maximum was 13.
How do you have fun?
I'm satisfied just chatting to you. Oh, and I joined a book group. We meet on Wednesdays.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you, too.
Okay, so before we get too excited, how much does it all cost? Here's Anna Dearden from R&IB again.
R&IB in your pocket will sell for £20 a month for a 24-month contract, which gives the device, the O2 connectivity, and the RealSam interactive speech software, as well as the subscription to R&IB Newsagent, and the ability to stream R&IB Library. The data is 3 gigabytes a month, and there is the ability to connect to Wi-Fi as well. The data is capped, so people can't exceed that limit. It doesn't include overseas roaming. However, Wi-Fi could be used if customers do decide to take it overseas.
Claire Maxwell, who tried out R&IB in your pocket, says it's been very useful to her.
I always used to like to keep up with the current affairs, but I always found myself going back to the old fashion style of radio or TV or whatever, and it's quite restrictive. And I've never really had that kind of experience of being able to sit down and actually just flick through the newspaper. But I kind of feel like I've got that with this device, the R&IB in your pocket, because I can access so many different newspapers. I can go through the articles. I can maybe not skim read, but I can get a flavour of the headlines quite easily.
But what support is out there if you want one of these devices but worry that you won't be able to use it? Anna Dearden says options are available.
In your pocket, it's very easy to use out of the box and comes with instructions from R&IB and a user guide manual from Real Thing. It has 4 buttons on it and is voice controlled. So what we found from those who've tested it is that it is able to be used as soon as they receive it. However, as ever, R&IB has our Technology for Life team who are available on the phone to support people with any technology and they're fully trained to be able to support on In Your Pocket, and the information is also being shared with our technology volunteers.
So as well as the additional support you can get with RNIB In Your Pocket, you can also be rest assured that you will be getting a device that is constantly being updated, as Nick Howden explains.
We're very happy with what we've done, and we're very excited about it. The feedback has been absolutely fantastic so far, and we're really looking forward to continuing to develop it. And that's another key aspect of it, is that it's not a static product. It's something that we'll develop over time, and we'll add more and more features. So as I said, we started off just with newspapers, and now we do newspapers and magazines and books and audiobooks and podcasts. Can tell you the weather, can tell you the time. It's got a GPS function, so you can say, where am I? And it'll give you an address and where you're standing at the moment. So we're looking at a number of other features to add in future. And we also welcome everyone's feedback on that. If people use the product and play with it and want new features, by all means give us that feedback, because we're continuing to add those as we go along.
You can buy RNIB In Your Pocket from RNIB Shop by calling them on 0303 123 9999. As the product requires you to sign up to a direct debit, you must call them rather than do it online, which, if we're all being honest, is probably a lot easier. Claire Maxwell says it's well worth the money.
I would definitely go out and buy it. Just for that freedom of having that ability to flip through newspapers, to have them at my fingertips, if you like, to have them wherever I want to, I definitely would go out and buy it. It's so intuitive as well.
Forget computers and downloads. I will automatically update myself, so you will always have the latest news and information available. You can order RNIB In Your Pocket or ask for more information by calling 0303 123 9999.
So there you have it. That's RNIB In Your Pocket, which you can order now, which is great. It's a handy little device, isn't it? You can find out more about it on our Tech Talk programme. That's the sister show to this one. You can get that on Tuesdays at 1 p.m. and you can also listen on podcast as well. Same place if you're listening to the podcast for the Weekly Connect. You'll find it there as well. Audio Boom, iTunes and the rest. One final comment from you this week, and this one comes from Daniel Williams on his most recent trip to the hospital. He thought he'd share his views. An actor reads his words.
It's that time of the year again. My annual appointment at the eye clinic. Always unsure why I am attending. There is nothing the consultants can do as a patient living with retinitis pigmentosa. Becoming more and more anxious, numerous conversations going on in my mind, as I know all they can really say is that my vision has got worse or stayed the same. There is no cure or treatment available to me. It therefore feels like a pointless exercise to repeat the obvious. As I reach the eye clinic, hands sweating, I approach the reception desk. Already the lighting in the room is patchy, darker in the waiting area, then lighter at the reception desk. I take a moment for my eyes to adjust. There are two people. Neither of them really acknowledge that I'm standing there. A muffled, "What's your name?" is heard, but I'm not quite sure if it's directed at me, as it's very difficult to focus with the bright light overhead. I'm signed in. I'm then told to sit over there. And I'm now thinking, where is over there? I head to the area behind me, assuming that is over there, trying to locate a seat. Everything is green walls, green floors, green chairs. I really am finding it difficult. Anxiously waiting for a nurse to call my name, my acuity test looms. The nurse shouts my name, and I head in the direction of where the voice is coming from, not really waiting for me to follow. I find the room, which is brightly lit once again. She then reads my notes. It does state I can only see hand movements, but she asks me to read the eye chart anyway, asking me what I can see. "Keep trying," she says. I tell her I'm unable to see anything. Even she is a blur as she blends in with the light-coloured wall behind her. She asks me, "How many fingers can you see?" I reply, "None at the moment. There is no colour contrast. Her fingers blend with her face, both cream in colour, so she holds them against her uniform, waving them. I find it extremely difficult to focus. That little exercise is over with, and I'm told to return to my seat. No help is offered. I'm told my next visit will be with the consultant in the yellow area. Well, this means nothing to me. I scream in my head, "Where is the yellow area?" She tells me to follow the yellow line on the floor. I feel like Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz, follow the yellow brick road. Well, maybe not Dorothy, but I am a Dan. Following a yellow line on a yellow floor is a bit tricky for someone with no peripheral vision. It is obvious that no thought has gone into the design of this eye clinic. The colour, lighting, seating, etc. are not easy to negotiate. Surely if you have different colour areas, then paint the walls that colour, have the carpet that colour, which would be easily identifiable rather than have narrow strips on the floor that I can't see. You have a light above the door that's great if I could see it. I've arrived at the yellow area, waiting to be called once again. There are many people walking in and out of doors, muffled names being called by consultants and then disappearing quickly back to their rooms. I'm not sure what room I'll be going into, so I wait patiently for my name once again to be called. I'm really not sure in what direction the voice is coming from as I scan my head from side to side. The trip to the eye clinic can be extremely exhausting, leaving patients drained physically and mentally, as they don't just have to contend with people looking in their eyes, but a huge lack of educated staff of how to communicate with patients with a visual impairment. All in all, staff working in the medical field of eyes are truly well experienced and knowledgeable in the anatomy of the eye. However, I believe they lack the fundamental skills to deliver diagnosis in a sensitive way and communicate effectively with patients who have low vision. They would benefit from visual impairment awareness training for all staff working within an eye clinic to raise general understanding, looking at the patient's need from a social model of disability and not a medical model.
That's the views there of Daniel Williams, who got in touch with us this week on email. Thank you for doing that, Daniel. I think a lot of people out there, including myself, would know exactly how that feels. But sometimes just laying it out like that really does make it clearer for all of us, and also makes us realise, you know, I'm not alone when I go into that hospital sometimes. I've been there myself. I know how that feels. Sometimes a horrible, very lonely existence going into an eye clinic and being told to read a board that you cannot see. Well, that is it for the Weekly Connect this week. That is your voice once again. Don't forget, we are back Mondays from 1 o'clock. Join us for that if you can. You can also get the show at any time on podcast. You can find us on Audioboom and on iTunes as well. And just a reminder, if you want to get in touch with the programme, please do, if you'd like to send in your thoughts. And hey, you might even get an actor say your words. I have to say, though, you know, Kevin Bacon is out of the question. It's just too expensive. But you will get a good actor, I promise you, reading your words. If you want to get your words on air, then please do get in touch. You can email theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. Or you can get in touch on Twitter as well. Find us at RNIB Radio and use the hashtag TheWeeklyConnect. Remember, if it's Mondays at 1 o'clock, it's The Weekly Connect. Thank you once again for listening, and we'll see you next time.